This is the February 15 edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists for the day include Matt Bennett from AgMarket.net, Mike Zuzla at GlobalComResearch.com, and Chip Nellinger of Blue Reef AgriMarketing. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. Find us online at willag.org, W-I-L-L-A-G.org, where today you can purchase your tickets for the all-day Ag Outlook at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana. This conference has been running since 1991. The cost is just $40. The Farm Doc team will join our Will Ag stable of panelists up front to talk about the outlook for commodity markets and agriculture in the United States and across the planet. We'll also take a look at the weather forecast. Eric Snodgrass will be there, and SAF, Sustainable Aviation Fuel, with the director for the Center of Sustainable Aviation here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. Tickets are just $40 online at willag.org or at farmdocdaily.illinois.edu. Let's begin here. I talked first with Matt Bennett this week, who was traveling back at the time from the Louisville Farm Show.
Yes. I came over to Farm Machinery Show at Louisville, and I will tell you, Todd, I believe it's the biggest crowd I've ever seen. And I don't know if that has to do with the weather, what it is, but typically, you know, around that Valentine's Day timeframe, which is when we have Farm Machinery Show, there's some weather issues that pop up. You know, we've had snow, all kinds of fun stuff. But this year, there was none of that. And I'll tell you what, it was a very, very large crowd. People everywhere.
Were they happy? Were they ambivalent? Were they worried? What things did they talk to you about?
I think they were happy until we started talking about the markets. And then, I don't know, you know, we did U.S. Farm Report there. We recorded it there on Thursday afternoon, and a very large crowd, standing room only. It was a good crowd, you know, but whenever we got to talking about what was going on, you know, obviously people understand that we've seen a bit of a pendulum shift, and it's going to be a little more of a challenge maybe this year than what people have seen the last couple 3 years. 23, you know, certainly wasn't any picnic, but right now 24 looks pretty challenging. So we just talked about, you know, some of the things that we're seeing, potential things that could happen that would be good, because you don't want to focus just on the bad. I mean, there's always some silver linings out there. You know, we just kind of tried to focus on a little bit of everything there.
We'll get to one of the bads, the USDA Outlook Forum numbers from this morning in a bit. What did you tell them that might be good?
Well, the thing is that it looks like the USDA is maybe under-projected as far as crush goes for the U.S., not only for this marketing year, but next marketing year. You know, and so I've got to kind of think that, you know, maybe the situation isn't as bad as everyone kind of portrays it. So whenever you look at the projection for, you know, this crop we're getting ready to plant, they're projecting 87.5 million acres. And, you know, and the carryout's a little over 400, but let's face it, 87.5 million acres of beans is a lot of beans. And so, you know, that carryout isn't the end of the world necessarily. Over on the corn side of things, you know, we still feel like we could go up on corn usage for ethanol, first of all. And second of all, I think exports, you know, if Brazil runs into any weather issues whatsoever, you know, and talking to, for instance, Eric Snodgrass, he's told me, you know, some of his models are starting to trend quite a bit drier into the next 6, 8, 10 weeks. So if that's the case, I think that our export program could be even better yet. Who knows? Maybe we could get this carryout for this marketing year closer to $2 billion or below. But even with that being said, Todd, you know, it's a pretty challenging situation on corn. It's hard to really paint a bullish picture whenever you're looking at 91 million acres and a 2.5 billion bushel carry, because that's just an awful lot of corn.
Those are the numbers that came from the USDA Agricultural Outlook Forum for corn this morning. The soybean numbers are just as bearish, maybe more bearish. I don't know. Maybe you can talk about that 435 million bushel ending stocks that they put out today.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, once again, I think that that number is maybe a touch high, because I think they've maybe underestimated on demand. Obviously, this crush industry continues to expand. We know that crush margins have dipped significantly from the November-December timeframe, but we also know crush margins have been good enough to continue very strong crush pace. So especially with more plants coming online as you go throughout this marketing year, you've got to think maybe they're going to be underestimating to the tune of maybe, 100, 150 million bushels at the very maximum. So, you know, if it was 100 million, you get it back down to 335. A 335 carry isn't great compared to the 200 and 150s that we've been looking at a little bit here the last couple of years. But 335 at 87.5 million acres tells me our demand continues to stay strong, and you really can't afford any sort of hiccups from Mother Nature. Now, last several years, Mother Nature has been anything but, you know, kind to the entire Corn Belt. We need to see a 2014 type year here sooner or later. You get that, and there's no doubt you've got a lot of downward pressure. But, you know, if you see a sub 50 bushel type yield, it could get pretty interesting awfully fast.
Did you talk to producers much about what to do as it relates to the March 1st bills that they're likely to need to pay? Have they resigned themselves to having to make sales at much lower prices than they wanted? And is there a way around that in some form that they might recoup a bit more out of the marketplace?
I mean, that's the thing, Todd, is that, you know, I don't want to get super cute with this market. If you do need to come up with a little bit of money, there's no doubt that a basis contract would make some sense. I don't want to get too many eggs in that basket. You know, if we're kind of waiting around to see if a rally is going to occur, a basis contract would work really good if you do get that rally. The problem is if you don't get it, the basis is going to have to do the work to pry the corn out of the farmer's hands on further declines on the Board of Trade. So one thing I've been saying is let's not put all our eggs in one basket. But if we do want to go ahead and move this corn and get out from under it, pay some bills off, stop some interest on operating notes and things like that, you know, we can step in and buy some calls fairly cheap. We've been doing something on a re-ownership basis that's costing less than 10 cents. And, you know, a lot of the growers we're working with really have latched onto that because, you know, it gives them the idea that they still have their toe dipped in the water as far as some sort of a recovery bounce, but they're also getting cash in hand. They're also paying bills and going to quit worrying about if the market goes down every day like it has lately.
In years when the market is trending lower and expected to continue to do so, it can be difficult, especially coming off of very high prices, to market new crop. I don't know that you're in a position where you're thinking now's the time. Probably not. But are you looking to market new crop on rallies, and how big do the rallies need to be for you to pull the trigger?
Yeah, I mean, we'd like to see a rally back into the mid 480s if possible. I mean, you're looking at a 20 cent rally at this point, though. Do you get a 20 cent rally? I mean, most years you'd get something like that. But even if I do make a sale there, Todd, as bleak as things look right now, I want to caution folks is to get out over their, they don't want to get over their skis too much whenever it comes to getting oversold. And the reason I say that is we are very dry, especially west of the Mississippi. I mean, there's a lot of folks we talk to on a consistent basis in Iowa that are telling us they're uncomfortably dry and they're not selling a bushel right now because they feel like this could really be a major issue if they don't get recharged in short order. So bottom line is if I get into the mid 480s, I'm probably going to set a floor in place. I'm probably going to do it with a put spread. So something like a $484 put spread, you know, why would I do something like that? Well, if you're buying crop insurance, 85% of 470, if that ends up being our price, is right at $4. So under $4, insurance is going to take over at APH yields. But what about 480 to $4? And that's where I get a little bit worried, is that that's a big time drop in profitability if we go that much down. Now, a lot of folks don't want to pay for a strategy like that. So we're actually, you know, willing to do some stuff like maybe even sell a call against a few of those bushels only for those that are buying crop insurance. And some of those strategies are only running 15, 16 cents, you know, at the market today. But if I want to get a 480, I'm going to put an offer in to buy that type of strategy whenever it gets down to those more attractive price levels, 12 to 15 cents, like we're seeing, you know, for some of the strategies that are at the market.
That's Matt Bennett from AgMarket.net. I spoke with him as he was beginning his travels back to the state of Illinois from the Louisville Farm Show on Thursday of this week. I also spoke on Thursday with Chip Nellinger of Blue Reef AgriMarketing and Mike Zuzlow at GlobalComResearch.com. Chip's in Morton, Illinois, and Mike is in Atchison, Kansas. I asked each of them, starting with Mike, to give me a list of items to discuss for the day.
Well, Todd, the Ag Outlook Forum, I didn't think really fed the bear, but the trade saw it completely differently. So kind of want to unpack that a little bit if we can, and then talk about the return of China and what to be looking for after their Lunar New Year as well.
I think obviously this record fund short position across all our ag commodities is something we probably need to talk about. Where could the bottom come in, and what's the future look like?
Okay, Mike, I'll start with you. I'm going to bite. Why is it that you think the numbers from USDA didn't really feed the bear, but why did the market take it that way?
You know, the best answer I can give, Todd, is what I learned a long time ago, and I think it's a disconnect with how the funds probably trade nowadays in terms of the data they look at and what they plow into their models for pricing. But when I went to my first Ag Outlook Forum in 1998 or 1999, what I was taught to look at was, okay, what is the USDA average cash price for the new crop versus where are we in futures and new crop futures minus the basis? And so where are we in actual cash market versus where we were in terms of USDA's numbers? And so wheat really glared and stood out at me because USDA came out today with the $6 average price for 24-25 marketing year. And if whether you look at Olney, Illinois for new crop or Toledo, Ohio for new crop, you're talking about 515 to 5.25 for cash new crop wheat if you sold it off the combines in the month of July. So we're already so far underwater and below our USDA average cash price. I would have thought that would have attracted some short covering. But I think the model makers nowadays and the funds really look at stocks and stocks to use. And I think that, along with that being able to trade any kind of bullish South American weather, is where we ended up trading today.
Yeah, just for comparison, the corn stocks to use ratio for new crop that USDA in the Ag Outlook Forum released at 17.2%, current year is 14.9%. The stocks to use ratio for soybeans for the old crop is 7.6%. That's the actual listed by USDA. And the Outlook Forum for the new crop expectation is 9.9%. And for wheat, the number is extraordinary, but I think this is in large regard because the United States is the place of last resort. It's the storage bin for the globe. But stocks to use ratio here in the old crop is 35.2. 40.3 is the stocks to use ratio for the new crop. And I frankly, Mike, don't know whether that is a big number or a small number historically for the United States or not.
Yeah, it's not a big number. When we look at the stocks and the stocks to use in wheat, the stocks are the highest since 2020, stocks to use highest since 2019. Compare that to the corn of a 2.5 plus, that's a record going back to 2001, which I call the modern era for agriculture right now. And the stocks to use of that 17.2, like you were talking about, that's the highest since 2005. Beans came in very similar to wheat, both the stocks and the stocks to use I show as the highest since 2019. But that right there is what we have heard ever since really the Christmas break, and that is China's deflation so bad, it's going to create a deflation spiral for commodities. And we're going back to the 2015 through 2019 price action for U.S. commodities, especially in agriculture, grains and soy specifically.
Since you mentioned China, we'll ask Chip Nellinger, where have they been and where will they be? This was something you wanted to talk about.
Yeah, I tell you, where have they been? They've been buying from South America and Brazil. That's the bottom line. And, you know, I think you mentioned it earlier that we're now the kind of source of last resort. You know, quietly, our corn exports have been okay. You know, end users have been using this price break the last few weeks to kind of get some coverage out there. And so quietly we're hitting the numbers we need to on corn exports. But, you know, Mike mentioned it earlier, China, you know, a lot of questions about their economy, what they're going to see going forward. Are they going to be there for U.S. agricultural products like they have been? Obviously, a bigger supply of beans, especially than a year ago, out of the Southern Hemisphere. And so they've been, you know, picking away and buying large amounts of Brazilian beans. And so that's the big question in the market's mind. And I agree with what Mike said here that, you know, I mean, I don't remember the Ag Outlook Forum in 20 plus years having as big an influence, or I guess as being as highly anticipated as it was today. At the end of the day, I don't think it came out anything beyond expectations. And I think the funds are just in such a huge selling frenzy, and there's such downside momentum that, you know, I don't know that it really mattered what the Ag Outlook Forum said today. The funds were going to sell it regardless, it appears.
These numbers actually weren't that far off of what their November release was, if I remember correctly. I think corn season's average price is, what, down 10 cents from 450 to 440. Why was the trade, do you suppose, looking so forward to this set of numbers? Is it just hope? Was it that they were looking for new information and new data, and this is the only place they could find something that might be useful for them to the upside, that is? And Mike, do you have some thoughts on this?
I think I couldn't encapsulate better than what Chip just said. I really think that we're in a hole right now because you have nothing on the supply side to counter an increase in ending stocks and a building of ending stocks and stocks to use ratio. I mean, carry out in corn is going to be up 17% if we can reach a 181 yield. Beans carry out is going to be up 38%, and we still got Brazil about $1.50 cheaper than us right now at Paranagua, and the wheat carry out is going to be up 111 million bushels, or 17%. I think when you look at it that way, Chip's right. I don't think you fed the bear in this report. I think you're right that the acreage base for corn and beans really didn't shift that much. And it made sense that the bean acreage went up versus the corn compared to the trade estimates because of the margins that farmers are facing, the cost of production pressure, interest rates, and that bean-corn ratio at this time of year. So I can't give you a good answer except that the macro fundamentals of the Chinese and the currencies and the bond markets and that CPI data, and going all the way back to the WASDE report, they provided no cover for the bull whatsoever. And so they're just being shot out of the wagon, so to speak, at this point.
I will say, and maybe you have something to say about this as well, Chip or Mike, that I get asked by farmers oftentimes about the average yield that USDA uses, this 180. And really, if we can make that, and have we ever made that? And the answer is no, we've not ever gotten there, but that the trend line tells us that that is where the average should be and can be. And my explanation when I talk to them is think of 1994 and 2004 and 2014, which were above that by 10 bushels to the acre. And that's where you end up getting those big numbers from. Have we reached 180 or 181 on a national average ever? No. Can we? Yeah, the trend line clearly says that that is super possible. And maybe the two of you have differing thoughts about that. But I know producers oftentimes are worried that USDA is holding price down because their trend line yields are so darned high in their opinion. Mike?
I think the biggest thing that we have to look at right now, and you're exactly right, and that trend line number that USDA uses has an R-square or a reliability of almost 80%, which is extraordinarily high. And so that's why they use it, because it's very reliable if everything is perfect. And so I was on the phone talking about the exact same thing today, Todd, because our five-year average is 173.2 on corn. Why would you stick a 181 out there? That again goes back to what the funds trade and their data models. Now we've got, I think, at a 15 billion bushel corn crop, I think unless we have a super hot and dry springtime and we build corn acres up, we've got the biggest carryover and the biggest production number to deal with at this point. And it makes me feel like we are moving. What's the good news? What's the thing to look out? If China doesn't give us any more negative news, I think we're building a case, a strong case, for a low coming into the March timeframe.
Chip Nallinger, I have a different kind of question for you to talk a little bit about. I want to talk about the export window in the United States, to China particularly, but it involves more than just China, because it appears in the last year that the export window narrowed, that the Brazilian crop, both corn and soybeans, went deeper into the calendar year for their exports and started again at a normal time. So the window has changed. Does that mean that we build stocks in the United States every year more often, do you think, than we have in the past, because our exports as a percentage of the total global exports will be less?
That's a great question, Todd. I think that there's a lot of moving parts to that. Obviously, you've had a couple production problems in the last couple of years, in different parts of the Southern Hemisphere. I think we've had our own logistical issues here with, river issues, the Mississippi River levels. You throw in the Panama Canal problems we're having there. And I think it's been a little bit of a train wreck logistically. Probably throw in there the Black Sea issue that we've faced the last couple of years. So I think that it's maybe an anomaly a little bit. Obviously, I think at the end of the day, it's going to depend on crop sizes, right? I mean, if you're looking at monstrous crops in the Southern Hemisphere, it's going to take them longer to put that out. They're going to have more supply to put out onto the market, and it's going to close our window a little bit. So, I think that at the end of the day, the answer to your question is going to be, ultimately, what are the sizes of both hemispheres' crops, particularly the Southern Hemisphere, because we're kind of becoming, as you mentioned, the supplier of last resort and only when needed here, and more of the world, grain bin than anything.
And on that same note then, Mike, USDA for both corn and soybeans in the new crop managed to raise the exports for soybeans 55 million bushels, corn something like 400 million. Those are not small numbers. Do you think that's possible?
Yeah, I do. And this goes back to the 2024 mindset and that 2015 through 2019 mindset. And how it looks to me like we're like 2004, 2005, the best cure for low prices is low prices, that we don't have deflation. The CPI number actually showed more inflation. The food spending on retail sales is one of the bright spots in a report this week by consumers, that we actually are putting in a demand low right now, except China won't let us do that. And the trade mindset won't let us do that because of China, Todd. And I think those demand numbers, I think, are real. And USDA also bumped up the bean oil demand for the sustainable aviation fuel. We talked about that a lot 6 months ago. Now it's not as much a big deal because we see South America coming on. And I think these are all valid things that would suggest to me that if China can move on their policy, pork prices, which make up about 3% of the total CPI, food and tobacco make up almost 22% of the total CPI in China. If we get pork moving back up again, I think the weakened demand deflation Japan of the 1990s mindset will go away rather quickly. So I think that's the number one thing I'll be looking at and looking for in the next, 15 to 30 days.
Chip, how do you assess the totality of the South American crop, both Argentine and Brazil, and what its impact might be on the marketplace?
Yeah, I think there's a huge amount of question there in my mind. We talked earlier about, the new mindset of these funds, and I don't ever remember in years past the trade giving as much emphasis to the USDA on our WASD monthly reports on particularly Brazil and Argentine numbers, right? There's literally 600-700 million bushel differences from low to high on both private estimates versus USDA on both corn and bean production out of South America. And so I think there's still a big question in my mind anyway. It doesn't seem like the market cares right now because they're assuming that the USDA numbers are right. They're kind of glossing over the fact that maybe ultimately the corn and the bean crops in the Southern Hemisphere are going to be well under where the USDA has them. So that, I think, could be something within the next 60 days that comes back and maybe reawakens the market up a little bit, or maybe at least causes a little bit of short covering and a pause saying, hey, maybe these crops aren't quite as big. And we've got the entire second crop of corn season to get through. And there's questions there with low prices as to how many acres they're going to plant for that second crop corn in Brazil. And so in my mind, there's still a lot of questions as to what the ultimate size of that crop is on both corn and beans in the Southern Hemisphere.
Again, I think Chips is right on the money. When he and I started, when Jimmy Carter was president, it was a different marketplace. And, you know, it's interesting because I've been doing a lot of research on the funds as I do speaking engagements this winter. And, you know, even people like the IMF and World Bank have gone back and looked at why are commodity prices different? And they are different than the 70s and 80s. And that's why I bring up Jimmy Carter and that Gerald Ford, early Ronald Reagan era. Commodity spikes were heavily dependent upon specific commodity supply demand fundamentals. After 1996, there's good research out there that says it's not that way. It's more about the macroeconomic fundamentals. And I really think that you can't have it both ways. You can't have the stock market making new highs in the United States and have China losing $7 trillion. At some point, Europe and China and Japan are going to drag the United States down because we're too connected. So if you're going to bleed the commodities out of all the premium that they should have with all the uncertainty that Chip's talking about, then you've got some major disconnects in this market, even by today's standards, if you ask me. Why did crude go negative $40+ a barrel back during the pandemic? Because all of a sudden, the algorithmic fund mindset, in my opinion, said demand's going to zero for 6 hours. That should have never happened, in my opinion. That was a marker in time that really made me nervous, and it makes me nervous today because we're talking about food security at the end of the day, and I do not like what we're seeing right now with some of these markets.
So you think the markets are over-influenced by the outside money that is driven through AI and black box then?
I think the extreme price moves is what I'm scared about. And what I talk about in meetings is, what if we take wheat negative twice in the next 2 years? How will we ever recover in terms of the supply side around the world? We can't do this. And the CFTC has opened up public comment on artificial intelligence and generative AI in commodities. And I was really glad to see that at the end of January. So that's really something to keep an eye on, I think.
And the difference, part of the difference, and I don't recall whether crude, does crude have a daily limit or was it able just to move?
The CME made a special press release, and this is my memory from 3 years ago, that they said we will allow crude oil to go negative. And, you know, we used to joke about, well, prices can only go to zero. Well, we can't say that anymore.
So final thoughts, I think, from each of you. Chip Nellinger, we'll start with you today.
Yeah, I mean, I think that the take home here is, it's easy to get depressed and upset about these markets. And I am as well. But I think there's going to be opportunities. And you got to have a plan of attack to reward those opportunities. There may be basis and spread opportunities staring us in the face currently. I don't think it's a place to get panicked and sell everything here in the hole. But certainly, you know, we're factoring in some awful bearish numbers, as we talked about earlier. And the bar is so high now that it could almost ratchet the other way. What if we don't hit 181 national average yield? You know, you take those yields down that we saw today in the Ag Outlook Forum, two bushels in beans and 4 or 5 in corn, and it's an entirely different scenario out there. So this will pass. The funds eventually will take some profits, and profits is going to be volatile. I don't think it's a time to panic, but it sure is a time to sharpen the pen, get a plan of attack for when the markets do put a correction higher in.
Just to dovetail on that, I think, you know, with 300,000 net short, this is not a place, I don't think, Todd, to go ahead and get deep into the short side of the corn market. I'd stay focused on the beans. I'd recommend, generally speaking, floors underneath the market in beans. They're the ones that are still too expensive in the United States versus Brazil. But I do almost everything with known cost paper positions at this stage. And again, kind of plan for the worst in terms of floor underneath you, but also think about a March, maybe April low in these markets because of this demand that we're seeing. I'm just like Chip. I'm not getting disappointed with this market or depressed. I'm getting disgusted. But the more I know, you know, knowledge is power. And, Emerson said something to the effect that knowledge is the opposite of fear, or if man who has knowledge does not have fear. I think that's exactly where we're at right now. So hedge with a floor, starting with beans, and then look at the idea of maybe some longs. And I would jump out there to the harvest price, crop insurance element of the side of the equation, that, you know, maybe take, spend some extra money on that case by case basis so that you have your back end covered there too.
Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. You may listen to the whole of the program anytime you'd like at willag.org, willag.org. Our thanks go to our panelists, including Mike Suzalom at globalcomresearch.com out of Atchison, Kansas, Chip Nellinger from Blue Reef Agri Marketing in Morton, Illinois, and Matt Bennett of agmarket.net. He is in Windsor, Illinois. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason.